Now, Judy's clock has just chimed, so it's 10:30. Welcome, everyone, to this morning's next session. Welcome to people listening on the internet. I want to, first of all, acknowledge Christo, and then I have one or two announcements. Christo?
Thank you, Mary. I received another email through the streaming from a South African lady, Hela de Beer. A message of good wishes and appreciation for the work of ICEP, especially for the successful implementations in Australia and New Zealand. She particularly enjoyed those presentations. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Christo. Just to let everyone know, we've had some conversations about the meeting of the Code Maintenance Committee this afternoon. Now, straight after lunch, we will be taking Phyllis's report at 1:30 when we restart after lunch. And we, once we've taken that report, I will close the more formal session of the Assembly, and Phyllis will take the chair and remain for however long conversation continues to run the Code Maintenance Committee meeting. And we will be streaming that, so internet people who are listening, just to let you know that yes, we will stream the Code Maintenance Committee meeting this afternoon. Just to remind you, when we come to question time, if you can put your hand up and keep it up until we acknowledge you, thank you very much. And now we want to move on to a paper from Judy Dixon, and it's called Braille Implementation on iOS Devices. So, Judy, take it away. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Let me start with a few words of explanation and a few disclaimers. iOS devices, what are they? iOS is the operating system for I being Apple iDevices, iPod, iPad. People are even calling them the iPod Touch, but it's iPod, iTouch, but it's really the iPod Touch, and iPhone, of course. So these devices all use essentially the same operating system, and the Braille display support for them is essentially the same. I have done this presentation a number of times, slightly different versions of it, and I have usually done it with as a PowerPoint presentation with a cable to switch back and forth between the display of my phone and the display of the PowerPoint. This has advantaged the sighted people because they could actually see the phone. And in most cases, the blind people in the audience have already known what I was talking about anyway. In this case today, I think there are certainly people here who are iPhone users and know what I'm talking about, but there are people here who have not had that opportunity. I'm going to try to explain as much as I can, but I fear I'm running the risk of boring half the audience and confusing the other half. So if we end this session and you are feeling bored or confused, actually if you're bored, that's fine. If you're confused, I welcome an opportunity to talk about this some more if you want to know more about it, or it can be very difficult to explain every detail. So I would be happy to do that. So what you have in your packets is the printout or braille out of a PowerPoint presentation. So these are actually slides with bullet points. And I'm going to go through the PowerPoint and then try to describe what I am demoing here. So there's kind of a formula for PowerPoints. You always, I guess it's a teaching formula. I'm not a teacher, so I But I think when you teach somebody something, you start out by telling them what you're going to teach them. So we will do this. This session will provide an overview of Braille implementation on iOS devices, iPhone, iPad, iPod Touch. It will discuss Braille output on an iOS device and discuss Braille input on an iOS device and explain Braille codes used and if how they can be input and output on an iOS device. We're just letting the trucks go by. Oh, lorries. I love that word. We're letting the lorries go by. Examining the viability of an iOS device in various situations, educational, professional, personal, and identify areas needing work. And there absolutely are areas needing work, and we'll get more to that in a moment. The advantages of using Braille with an iOS device. Well, I'm preaching to the converted here, so all of you must know that the advantages of using Braille are all the same ones that we always have about using Braille. We can see spelling and see things change and all of that. You can input text much more quickly. Now, I know there's going to be some hotshot iPhone users out there, oh, I can input text just as fast as anybody. Well, I'm sure that's true. But I will speak for... I will speak for myself and Bill Jolly to say that I can absolutely input text more quickly with a Braille display, a Braille keyboard, than I can with a iPhone by itself. If the display has routing keys, cursor routing to specific areas is quite efficient, and navigation is much more precise, it's quiet, and it's private. And those are all good things. You need a Braille display to do this. Perhaps that's obvious, but refreshable Braille. Lorry time. iOS devices support more than 30 different refreshable Braille displays. And there is a list of those on the web, and here's the URL for that list. It only supports Bluetooth devices. So you can't connect it via a USB or via a cable. It has to have Bluetooth support. No drivers are needed. And after pairing once, the pairing process between the Bluetooth device and the phone can seem a bit tedious, but you only have to do it once, hopefully, although for whatever reason we seem to have to do it more than once. But if no connection... If you have difficulty, if you are using one, sometimes just locking and unlocking the phone fixes the problem. With a Bluetooth Braille display, a Braille reader can read the information provided by VoiceOver in Braille, can input text if the Braille device has a keyboard, and can replicate VoiceOver gestures with display keys. This is the way, let me say just a few words about the way a blind person uses an iPhone, because it's a touch screen. But there's a modified set of gestures. The gestures that are used by a VoiceOver user are different in many ways from the gestures used by a mainstream iPhone user. But we have more gestures and they're used somewhat differently. So the actual gestures can be replicated with the Braille display. And you can quickly configure Braille input and output with the display keys and obtain additional information provided by optional status cells. Okay, to set up Braille, here's where you'd see a nice image of the screen of the iPhone. Do you have SimBraille in your screen images in your print PowerPoint things? Print readers? Do you have... No. Oh, you don't. Okay, well, they were there on the PowerPoint. So you would see a screen of the settings menu, and to set up the Braille display, you'd go into settings, go to general, go to accessibility, go to voiceover, go to Braille. And if you've turned on a Braille display and Bluetooth is enabled, it's sitting there calling out to the phone, hello, I'm here. And it will just come up on the screen and say, mine says Vario Connect 24, and I select it. And then the voiceover menu will connect it and prompt me for a pairing code. I enter the pairing code and I pair, and that's it. It's done. Suddenly, bing, Braille shows up on my Braille display. I have a Braille display here. It's a Vario Connect 24, and I could go through that process, but I'm not sure that it would. I think it would just be a lot of noise, so we won't do that. So within the Braille menu, in settings, you have contracted Braille on and off. Now, in the words of Apple, when contracted Braille is off, what you have is uncontracted Braille. So contracted Braille on and off is contracted and uncontracted Braille. You have 8-dot Braille on off. Now, you can have 8-dot Braille on, and when it's on, you get, what do we all call it, grade zero or ASCII Braille or various, I don't know if we've ever really come up with an exactly accurate term for what that is, but it's not contracted. It's not. It's that character for character Braille mode with the 7th and 8th dot showing. That's all fine. We'll talk about that more in a minute too. When you turn 8 dot off, you have either contracted or uncontracted. You don't have 6-dot one-for-one Braille. That is a mode that is severely lacking on iDevices. You also have status cell on off, left, or right. Now, what iDevices mean by status cells is not what those of us who have been using Braille displays for a long time think of Braille displays as having a few extra little cells that show us other things. This is not that. This is, you can designate a cell on the left or right of your Braille display to be a cell that shows you status. But it's one of your existing cells. So if you have a 24-cell Braille display, when you turn one of them into a status cell, you now have a 23-cell Braille display. So, but it's your existing cell. It's, you don't have to have... I never even tried this for a long time. I don't have any status cells. I can't use this. Well, I can, because it doesn't mean what I thought it meant. So that's one of the things you can do. And then you choose the Braille display. And as I said, it would just appear there if Bluetooth is working as it should. We talked all about 8-dot Braille. All the Braille written on paper uses a 6-dot cell. This is something that many of my audiences don't truly understand like you all do. And virtually every refreshable Braille device on the market today has 8-dot Braille cells. Dot 7 and 8 are used to show uppercase and special characters. Apple has implemented its own version of the 8-dot character set for Braille. I'll give you a little example of that in a minute. So contracted Braille, when it's off, Braille on display is shown in uncontracted Braille. Braille input is interpreted as uncontracted Braille. When it's on, the Braille display is shown in contracted Braille. The Braille input is interpreted as contracted Braille. Okay, 8-dot Braille. When it's on, Braille and display is shown in 8-dot Braille, all words spelled out with dot 7 and 8 indicating uppercase and other special characters. Braille input is interpreted as ASCII Braille. There is no 8-dot off and contracted Braille off. Doesn't work. Optional status cells. These are the things that you can have displayed on your status. If dot 1 is up, the phone is telling you that the announcement history contains an unread message. It means the phone tried to tell you something and you weren't listening. Dot 2, current announcement history message hasn't been read. Well, why? 3, voiceover speech is muted. So you can mute the speech and use the device only with a Braille display. This is a good thing when you're in a meeting and you want to text somebody. Right. Dot 4, iPhone battery is low, less than 20% charge, because the phone will tell you, battery is low, and just, whoop, missed that. Well, you can look over there in your little status cell and see that. Dot 5, iPhone is in landscape orientation. I don't know why I need to know this. I haven't figured that out yet, but because I lock mine in portrait anyway. Dot 6, screen display is turned off. Oh, this is another very cool feature of iDevices. With 3 taps, 3 times, you put what's called screen curtain on. so no-sighted people can see what you're doing. So when you're in a meeting sending text messages with your Braille display, the display of your iPhone can also be completely black. It's absolutely wonderful. Thank you, Apple, for whoever thought of that. It's very cool. Dot 7 and dot 8 show you if the text is longer than the line of Braille display, will actually say there's additional text. I mean, you could just look, and I do. But it does tell you that if you need to know. Replicating gestures. The display configuration varies from one device to another. My particular device that I have here has a Braille keyboard, an 8-dot Braille keyboard, but it also has three control buttons on either end of the Braille display. And these, there are three vertical buttons on the left end, three vertical buttons on the right end. So you can think of these six buttons. Oh, they look something like a Braille sound. Look at that. Two rows, three high. I know what to do with this. So if I wanted to replicate the home key, I can just do the two on the left, the middle one on the right.
New notification from Metro Radio.
Go away.
Radio. A coastal flood advisory for current location is in effect until Wednesday, May 9th, 2012 at 1:00 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time.
Thank you, Weather Radio. I think that's in Washington, D.C., not here. Don't think we have a coastal flooding. My phone is connected. So, these ways of replicating the gestures on the phone are, well, the home button, you just press the home button, but there's a standard set of commands. So, let's say we want to read the page starting at the selected item. Two-finger swipe down if you're using the physical screen, but I can just press dots 1, 2, 3, 5. Well, we all know what that is. That's an R. Read display. I can remember this. So it's quite handy to be able to replicate the phone gestures with the Braille display because it also acts as a good mnemonics. So I have a sample list. This is just a sample. There's a bazillion. There are some gestures on the phone that aren't replicated. This is Apple, if you're listening, this is a part you're supposed to pay attention to. Gestures not replicated. Double tap and hold, because you want to drag the item. And it also is a way of executing a standard gesture that a sighted user would use. Three-finger single tap. Anyway, there's this little list of gestures that are not replicated. It's on my list of things for Apple to fix. Bring focus to a table index. It's quite cool. You get into a list like your contacts. I have 462 contacts on my phone. Well, to flick through them when I'm looking for Fred Schroeder and he's down in the S's is a very tedious action. Well, on the right side, let's try contact. This just for fun.
Calendar. When's contact?
I think you'll be able to hear this.
Contacts. All contacts. Groups. Back button.
John's mic might not be quite close enough. Let's...
Yeah.
You can hear it. Okay. All right.
All contacts. Header.
Okay. So we're in contacts, and I'm going to...
Table index adjustable.
It says table index
table
adjustable.
Adjust the value.
Now, if I tap and hold...
I...
I'm running my finger. There.
Selected.
I ran my finger just up and down the screen, and it goes, you know, all and all the letters just speak. And when I got right on the S that I wanted, I could then arrow through the S's and get to the right guy. Oh, my, now I'm just getting into text message. Good heavens. This is terrible.
Contact.
So the table index is quite a slick feature to use. iOS devices is a Braille reading tool. Any document can be read in contracted Braille, and the device is doing the contracting. So you can turn contracted Braille on or off. If the file is already in contracted Braille, if it's what we call a BRF file, it is fine, except there's no way to turn off the seventh and eighth dots. And this is thank you, Apple, that you're listening. This is another issue for Apple, that we really need a six-dot mode that is still giving us the one-for-one, because we don't have it. And it makes reading BRF files a little tricky. iOS devices is a Braille writing tool. Braille is written in Carta with a very precise set of rules. You can see this is the, you know, again, this isn't you. There are many anomalies within the Braille code. You like that word? That was one of my favorites. Yeah, I was polite for weird things. Users must be extremely accurate in the way the Braille code is written, and they must understand the unique ways that Braille is implemented. Right. Braille input. With 8.Braille off. Ah. This is another curiosity about... let me see if I can show you this. We will try.
Tab to open. Weather.
No.
Page 1 of 4.
I'm now flicking with three fingers to the left to change the screens on the device. I have it all in four screens. I have 185 apps on my phone, but I have them mostly in folders. But I'm going over to the fourth screen where I keep miscellaneous things. And Notes is here.
Notes.
I just opened Notes. So.
Add button. Search. Search field. Double tap to edit. Note. Search.
I'm going
to
add a note.
Add button.
So this, all this is going to do is get me into a place
to edit.
Actually write and edit. Okay, double tap to edit.
Insertion point at end.
So, I have a cursor, and all I see on my Braille display is a cursor. So, I'm going to start writing the word morning. Oh, I don't have contracted Braille on. Hold on.
Contractions on.
I can do that right from my Braille display, and I saw it in Braille. Contractions on. M-O-R.
On.
So, I waited for about a second, and it wrote M-O-R. Then I'm going to type an E.
Why?
The reason why it said why is because what I now see on my Braille display, and you'd be able to see on the screen if you could see the screen, which you can't, is M-O-R-E-V-E-R-Y. Because now I'm going to space.
Morebury.
Morebury. Now I'm going to write M-O-R-E. And... after a while, it'll say more.
More.
And it just sucked it up, and now I just have an M. That's fine. If you remember to, don't pause. It's using this dynamic translation, but it's using time as the limiter. And that is, Apple, if you're listening, please. There's other things you could use as limiters, Apple, like the space, which might be a little easier to use. Who knows? Does everybody get the concept of what's going on here? Good. It's funky. But it's the way it works right now. Okay. Going back and forth here. Oh, anomalies, yes. I talked about those. So I talk about timing function is in effect. Writing quickly delays this interpretation until the end of the string, as I just demonstrated that. So with 8.Braille on, uppercase letters are formed with .7. Numbers are letters A to J in the lower portion of the cell. So you guys know this stuff. Computer Braille punctuation is used. With 8.Braille off, capitals are formed. Yeah, that's right, right. We know this. Numbers one, punctuation and Braille punctuation. Okay, so we do have these 8-dot things. And if anybody knows what code Apple is using for their 8-dot Braille, I would like to know this because it is not UTF-8. It is not ASCII or flavors that I've been able to identify. I can't figure out what it is. But the euro sign, for example, is dots 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, and 7. And we can actually input these with an 8-dot keyboard. And it, and the lowercase letter thorn, I use that a lot. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So one superscript is 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7. and lowercase I acute. So you have this kind of smattering of accented letters, along with really useful stuff like thorn and est and wonderful things. There's the sharp S. I think it's the esset. I'm curious. I'm in Braille here. It says transcriber defined sign, and I don't know what that means because I don't see anything that transcriber defined. Anyway, okay. It's that. It's that number sign th. I guess. Okay. Braille input. Input keys and other controls, if available, can be used. Now, there are Braille displays that don't have Braille input keys. There are Braille displays. Then what you do with those to replicate the gestures is to just chord. And in Braille display language, chording means you enter a character with the space bar at the same time. And that's we've been chording for a long time with Braille displays that go way back. Some Braille keyboards connect by Bluetooth. There can be Braille keyboards without displays. The Braille pen is a Braille display, a little 12-cell Braille display with a keyboard. Then there's a version of it. I'm not sure what it's called. Is it still the Braille pen without the display? I think it is. That has a Braille keyboard. Also, Anse has an 8-dot Braille keyboard that's just a keyboard and doesn't have a Braille display. But it still would be quite useful with an iOS device. Editing with a Braille display's keyboard or Braille keys board does not emulate a mainstream Bluetooth keyboard. And this is a really important point. Apple, you're supposed to listen again now. With a Bluetooth keyboard, it is possible to press the left and right arrow keys. If I touch my Braille display right now and I hit the
previous note
right button. .5. I don't have to do this with you guys. Thank you. If I just hit .5, it's here, cycling through
delete button.
Different controls, gating the screen, as it were. If I had a Bluetooth keyboard and I was pressing the right arrow, it would do the same thing. The problem is, if I go into an editor, I go back to my note.
Today, may not done button, markedly more, heading.
And I want to
markedly more, heading, done.
Arrow back and forth. I have to do this really complicated thing. I have to now change the rotor. There's a way of controlling things in a voiceover called the rotor, and you can
language, vertical navigation, hints, volume, headings, words, characters.
Okay, I'm rotoring through the options. I'm now gonna be able to move by character.
Notes. Back
whoops.
Marvelly more.
I can move my character if I remember what key to press.
O-R.
There. Now I can move my character. But with a Bluetooth keyboard, all I have to do is turn nav mode off, and suddenly my arrow keys are arrow keys. Up or down, left, right. Now, if I wanted to go up and I just changed it to characters, that's fine. That'll let me go left and right. If I happen to want to go up and down, if I happen to multiple lines in my more every more message, I would have to go and change it to lines. This is complicated. I find this really complicated. So I know there are people who say, "Oh, I use this all the time." Fine, but it is. It's pretty complicated. If we could just hold down dots 2 and 5 and turn nav mode on and off, it would make our editing life.
Battery is under a quarter full.
Okay, that is not my phone. That's my speaker. My lovely lady. My husband's in love with this jambox lady. You know, I try this. Battery is a quarter full. It just doesn't work. Now my husband is calling. I don't believe this. I'm not answering. It'll stop in a minute. He already knew I just mentioned his name. You know, it's dangerous to have your phone on. Oh God, where am I? I'm sorry. So I'm talking about nav mode, and if Apple would implement nav mode on a display, it would be really nice. So there are apps for writing Braille that are being developed, and apps for writing Braille, and you'll hear a lot about them. They've gotten a lot of press, and yet right now they're not terribly useful because it's not like you can write Braille in an edit box in Notes or anything else. You can only write Braille in the Braille writing app. And then there are ways you can cut and paste it and send it by email or whatever. You can just kind of do things with it, but I think it's still pretty limited. That's not using a Braille display, just writing on the phone using something else. So, Apple has implemented English Braille American Edition and Unified English Braille. If you turn your regional setting to Australia, you'll get UEB. It looks pretty good to me. I guess it's not perfect, but I don't think it is perfect on any of them. So I, in these presentations, talk about the importance of contacting Braille Authority for Apple to implement Braille correctly, and it's something, Apple, if you're listening, make the note of that too, please. And the vendors should work with national Braille authorities to make sure all this is done correctly. I fear that was a bit muddly. But being, but Bill says I was good, but he already knows. Good, thank you. So, any questions?
I have a question.
All right, we'll go to Bill first.
I do know the iPhone, but I don't know Braille with the iPhone. So thanks very much for a very interesting presentation. And one Braille document that I'll certainly be taking back to Australia with me. It seems, I've got two questions. Firstly, it seems, if I understand correctly, Judy, that you can have contracted Braille, the contracting and uncontracting being done on the iPhone processor, or the contracting and uncontracting being done on the Braille display.
Can I answer that first before you get to your second question?
Yes. So I guess you need to have those coordinated because you don't want contracting something that's contracted or whatever.
No. My Braille display doesn't do any contracting. It's just a dumb display. When you are using something like a Braille Sense or a Braille Note with an iPhone, you go into terminal mode to do this. So I haven't used a Braille Note. Fred, can you double contract? Do you know?
No idea.
No idea. Okay.
But you wouldn't want that happening.
I think you can't. It doesn't work in terminal mode. But essentially, the way I'm doing it, I'm getting the contractingness from the iPhone and not from my display. My display doesn't know anything about contraction.
So in setting up things, that's a sort of a principle we should follow and try and use the iPhone. That's very good. Thank you. The second question is, you mentioned, for instance, that the rendering is Unified English Braille, for Australian people, so that's great. But it's possible that it hasn't got everything right and
sure, that's
there's
true.
Still some things being bedded down with UEB. Is there a good mechanism for providing feedback to Apple to improve some things, say, with the contractions or other aspects generally that you referred to?
Apple has an email address, accessibility@apple.com. They're my new best friends. And you can write to them, and you'll probably get an answer, but the answer will almost certainly be, we will take that into consideration and file that away somewhere. I mean, we have seen improvements. I don't want to be unfair to Apple. I think the fact that they've gone through so much effort, I think short of spectacular, we didn't have the 8-dot function until iOS 5, which just came out in the last few months. And prior to that, it was a major challenge to enter an email address. I mean, you really had to stand on your head and wiggle your ears and get all the characters, and you try to enter a dot to enter it, and then backspaced. It was very weird. But now with the 8-dot mode, it's quite straightforward to do that. So there have been improvements, there will be more. They just never come as fast as we might like them. And we always have to wait for new iOS. 5.1.1 just came out, I think, yesterday or the day before. And I have not heard yet if there are any Braille improvements in it or not. I've been watching the lists, and I don't want to install it here. So I don't know if it's improvements or not.
It's the accessibility of the iPhone devices, the iPhone and the iPad, has really been a tremendous breakthrough for us, and to have the Braille as well as VoiceOver is terrific, and it's been a great mainstream development, hopefully a sign of things to come. Thanks.
Okay, Sarah.
Thank you. 1 second.
Judith, it wasn't a boring paper after all.
Oh, good.
Not with the side attractions.
Thank you.
Where does the Braille display come on? I've touched the iPhone a couple of times. In the Braille keyboard? Could you explain it?
Maybe I can just show you some. I can turn the Braille display on and off independently of the phone. If it doesn't have to be on, I can turn it on, and when the phone comes on, everything is fine. So, and then the keyboard's just always there. The keyboard is physically part of the display, and it if the display is on and connected to the phone, then the keyboard inputs keys, if the phone will allow input at a particular moment, because the phone doesn't always... What sighted people see a keyboard show up on the screen. It's right there. And so when that's the time when the Braille display will allow me to use the keyboard. I'm not sure if this all makes any sense, and I'd really be happy to show it to you.
Okay, an observer from South Africa.
Thank you, Secret from South Africa. I would like to know whether those iPhones, do they automatically come with the built-in speech software, or you have to buy it aside?
No, they automatically come with built-in speech. Any of you who have an iDevice, you can go into settings, you can go to general, go into accessibility, turn VoiceOver on, and your iPhone will talk. And it will warn you, turning this on means your gestures will not work the way you expect them to, okay? So it'll warn you that your gestures will be weird. But yes, and every iDevice has VoiceOver built in.
Okay, I think it seems that to be blind, you have to be rich before.
Hanif has a comment question from the stream. Hanif?
You can go ahead, Devolf. I mean, Andre.
Okay, thank you coming through.
Yes, you are.
My name is Andre van Deventer. Now, I am, as you would have seen from my earlier comment, I'm very involved with the deafblind community. I am blind and severely hard of hearing myself. I have been co-moderator of a list for dealing specifically with technology inside the deafblind community, that the deafblind community use from a user's perspective. Now, that would be anything from iPhones and things to microwave cooking, all kinds of weird stuff that come up there. But what is interesting to me is that I would say almost 75 to 80% of the discussions going on that list is about the iPhone now. Now, some of you may know that there has been two attempts specific to manufacture a kind of a face-to-face communication system for deafblind people, using some kind of PDA or cell phone device and a Braille display and so forth. Unfortunately, both disasters use the deafblind community at all. An interesting comment is that which a person then can type in and the other person can read on the Braille display. So just another interesting, Braille is not just a reading tool, it is very often a communication tool using such devices or even using things like Braille boards and so forth. So this is just, the pity is the information that we share with each other on this specific list out much wider than what we discussed there, which is actually, I think, a great pity. Finally, just I must say, my old Nokia E52 with mobile speak with my brother's place seems a bit easier to work with, I must say, than what I hear from the presentation. Madam Chair, thank you for allowing my comment.
Pleasure. Judy?
Yes, thank you also. I think that the potential for iDevices as communication tools for deafblind people is tremendous. I've seen deafblind people using them to communicate with sighted people, and because you can just hand a sighted person a QWERTY Bluetooth keyboard and you can see it on the braille display, it's great. The iDevice will allow up to 7 Bluetooth devices to be connected simultaneously. So it's great. Right now I have 2 up here connected to my phone, so it does work very well.
Any further questions? Before I let Judy go, Judy, can you tell us where we are in Johannesburg, latitude and longitude?
Ah, yes.
And altitude as well, please.
Altitude. Tango.
I'm closing. I press the home button to close notes.
Wells Fargo. Wanderlust.
This happens to be a miscellaneous.
Don't get lost.
Here's an app called Don't Get Lost. So we'll run Don't Get Lost.
Latitude.
And now I'm going to look at it on my braille display. Minus 25.92
south.
And longitude is 28.15
east.
And the altitude is 1,532.00 meters.
Meters.
That is where we are. We are in Centurion, South Africa. I learned that from another app that I have. And that was the first time I'd seen it.
5,022.97.
Oh, it's going to tell us it's 5,022.97 feet. Thank you, Mary.
That's quite amazing. That's an excellent presentation, Judy. Thank you very much. Now we've got one. We've got a question from Botswana.
Okay, Kennedy from Botswana. I just want to know if you have to have, apart from iPhone, or if you are to use both, do you have to have also the braille display aside? You have to have a separate braille display.
Do I have to have a braille display that is supported by the device? Is that what you're asking?
Uh-huh.
Okay, yes, you do. I know of no way to use a braille display that is not supported, that's not already there, that the device doesn't already know about. And it does know about virtually all of them, not every single one, but that's something they are adding. And if there is a display that it doesn't work with already, I'm sure it will be added in a future release.
Although the speech has been quietened, okay. Is there one last question for Judy?
No.
All right. So, can we show our appreciation to Judy and the usual? Now we'll give Judy and Leona just a couple of minutes to swap over, and then we'll move straight on to Leona's presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Leona, for coming to present your paper about rapid Braille, automatic conversion from DAISY to Unified English Braille. Leona works for Vision Australia, and I'm really looking forward to hearing this presentation too. Thank you, Leona.
Thank you, and hello, everyone. So as Mary said, I'd like to talk to you today about a project that we conducted at Vision Australia at the end of last year, and we called the project Rapid Braille. Okay. So as the name implies, the aim of the project was to enable a rapid automated production of Braille books. More specifically, we wanted to create a way of using our existing DAISY 3 full-text files that we already had as part of the library collection to create Braille books for our online library collection. So you all have a copy of my paper as part of the assembly document, so I won't read the full paper, but instead I want to give enough of a description of the project, and then we'll also look at some of the more interesting topics that it relates to, such as what it tells us about automated translation of UEB and also the future of Braille production in relation to other formats. So as we've already heard this morning, Braille is now an electronic medium, and it's one of among an increasing variety and number of electronic text formats. Bookstores are closing down, print books are being replaced by e-books, and websites are providing the information that was once found only in newspapers and magazines. And in Australia, the most popular e-book format is EPUB, and in a very cursory analysis, I found that of 10 print books that were requested for conversion to Braille for our library collection this year, all 10 of these randomly selected books were commercially available as electronic text. So the text is out there, we need to get access to it in Braille. The Vision Australia Library provides a range of reading materials for people who are blind, who have low vision or print disability. And the majority of our borrowers are over 65 years old, and they use the library for leisure purposes. The library collection includes over 22,000 DAISY audio titles and 8,000 Braille titles. Of the Braille titles, around half are only available as embossed Braille, whereas the other half are available as both hard copy and electronic files, which will soon be in the online library collection. At the beginning of last year, in readiness for the launch of our online library service, Vision Australia began commissioning the conversion of public domain books, so those that don't have copyright restrictions, from EPUB format into DAISY 3 full-text files. The main component of the resultant DAISY books is an XML file which contains all of the text for the book and some formatting markup. So by June this year, we hope to have converted over 2,000 books in this way from EPUB to DAISY full text. Library members will be able to download the DAISY book and read it on screen with their preferred magnification and contrast, or using synthetic speech generated by their software or by their DAISY player. These new DAISY full-text files are a supplement, but definitely not a replacement, to our other production streams for the library collection. So every year we produce a total of 180 new human-narrated audiobooks and 180 Braille books, with an emphasis on new Australian content. So this meant that we would have three production streams for the library, each quite distinct, and using its own processes. But what about the concept of a single source file, where we could use a single marked up file to produce more than one format? That's where the Rapid Braille project came in. What we wanted to do was to test the viability of using DAISY 3 XML as a source file for the automated production of Braille. Our hope was to create a method by which we could our existing DAISY library books could be converted to Braille as a bonus format at virtually no cost after the initial setup of the project. So as a result of the project, we hope to increase the amount of information that's accessible, to increase choice for Braille readers, to promote Braille, and also to make the Braille production cheaper and faster. to ensure that the Braille files produced through Rapid Braille were accepted and used by our borrowers, another important goal was to maintain the highest possible standards. So the resultant Braille was designed to meet Australian Braille Authority standards as far as possible, and I think we did pretty well with that actually, and to be consistent with the formatting of our other Braille materials in the library collection. Because this was our first real venture into the realm of fully automated Braille, we were very careful to set some very clear parameters that would limit the project and ensure that we had a successful outcome. And we also, of course, wanted to minimise the setup time and the costs. So first, our first parameter was that we would use the XML files that were all obtained from the same supplier, and that would mean that the markup would be consistent. So the XML files are identical to those that are used that are included in the DAISY 3 file set, but with two slight exceptions. Firstly, we added a tag to indicate where the main text begins, and we also retained some of the original EPUB tags, so some of the tags that were in that EPUB file, but that were removed during the conversion to DAISY 3. Some of those were useful for the Braille, so we kept those. Secondly, we didn't aim to convert all of the DAISY 3 books, but instead only select those that didn't have complex formatting, such as poetry or plays. So that's a minority of books, but for those we thought, let's not start with those. The output files will be in BRF format, so that's Braille format. And while these files can be embossed, we didn't have immediate plans to create hard copies or physical copies for the library collection. And we imagined that most users would prefer to access the books using the refreshable Braille display rather than embossing the whole book themselves. The books were therefore kept as a single file with only 30 cells per line. We did still add some features that would assist if the book was embossed, such as a Braille contents page and a navigation line with page numbers and a running title. So that was future planning, really. So I'll go into a little bit of the nitty-gritty of how we created the Rapid Braille software. Hopefully I won't bore too many of you. So the first step in the process is to modify and enhance the DAISY XML file so that it's optimal for the Braille translation. We created a number of scripts and lookup tables to modify the file and to create our own custom Braille-ready XML file. So it's kind of like DAISY Plus a bit more. So firstly, we add custom text and tags to create a title page and copyright and production information. So there's first few pages that are pretty standard. And we were able to use the metadata that already exists in the DAISY file to obtain the information specific to the book, such as the title and the author, that could then be put into our standard title page format. Secondly, we created a contents page that lists all of the level 1 and level 2 headings in the book, with spaces for the appropriate Braille page numbers to be automatically added once it's been translated to Braille. Thirdly, we tidied up the original input file, so we corrected common errors and ensured that punctuation spacing was consistent. Some people might have noticed that EPUB files can contain a lot of minor errors, and some of these would be hardly noticeable to a print reader, but they can greatly affect the way that the Braille appears. So an example of this is when you have bold or italics, if it ends before the punctuation, you wouldn't notice that in print, but you would definitely notice it in Braille, and it just makes it messy to read. Unnecessary symbols. So we fixed those sorts of things up. And lastly, we wrote a series of scripts to add a meaningful running title. As I said, we wanted to have that navigation line in case of embossing. So the running title includes the name of the book and the section, and the running title changes at the start of each new section. Because the space is so limited in the running title, we only had 30 cells across, and we're putting the page numbers up there as well, it was important to abbreviate common words and also to remove those that were less important to try and get something that made sense. We investigated a number of Braille translation software options, but surprise, surprise, we found that Duxbury was the best, particularly in terms of unified English Braille. So Duxbury also offered the advantage of being able to directly import DAISY XML files. So it recognises most of the tags already for us. But we did do a bit of tinkering within Duxbury so that it would recognise all of the markup tags we were using. Some of those we had added in our enhanced stage. And we also created a template so that it would apply our preferred formatting to match with the Vision Australia standard formatting. So the final steps in construction were to write scripts to send the new Braille-enhanced XML file to Duxbury and to apply the custom template and translate to UAB. The correct Braille page numbers are then added to the contents page and the new Braille file is saved to a folder structure ready for storage in the Vision Australia online library. Now, because fully automated Braille and online Braille would be new to our Vision Australia borrowers, we were very mindful of the need to consult with all of the relevant stakeholders throughout the project. Before we even began, we created a number of samples that provided a mock-up of how we thought rapid Braille books might look. And we distributed them in Braille and also in annotated print, so print that pointed out things that were a bit strange for a Braille user. And we gave them to Braille experts and also to a random selection of our average Braille library borrowers and also to relevant managers and advisors within Vision Australia. So there were probably almost as many opinions as people, but it was generally agreed that the output Braille files would be acceptable for inclusion in the library collection and the software was underway using the actual translation. And we showed these to the same Braille experts as well as to our internal Braille transcribers and proofreaders. So I don't always like being told that I was wrong, but on this occasion I was very happy to be told that the original mock-ups I'd created were too conservative and actually some of the Braille readers made some very good suits and some of these proof some others we've got on our to-do list for the next version. So two of our Braille experts are actually in the room today and some others might be listening at home to say thank you to everyone who helped us to get the best possible quality outcome for Braille readers. So what did we specifically achieve? The project took about 3 months to complete and we used in-house staff resources. The majority of the work was performed by just two staff members on a part-time basis, so it was a relatively minor investment for us. The result was a new software that we've affectionately named BERT, which stands for Braille Engine for Rapid Translation. BERT operates invisibly after the touch of a single button and he is used by a Braille illiterate staff member who knows nothing about Braille. So he just puts the input files into one folder, presses the button and then he's got the output Braille files in another folder ready to upload to the library. So if any of the files are invalid and the process fails, an on-screen warning will be given, but we haven't encountered this problem at all in the first few batches. We just did another batch yesterday and they emailed me to say, oh, can I just stick them straight up because it looks fine. I will take a look before they do that. But everyone's pretty confident about it. So we're now going back through the first 1,000 or so DAISY full-text files that were added to our collection before we had created BERT to select those which are most popular and are not already available in Braille so that they too can be put through the rapid Braille process. Okay. I'd like to think that another achievement of the rapid Braille project is that it does serve as a very concrete example of what can and cannot be automated easily when converting from text to UAB. So those things that we were able to automate were things that are most regular and predictable. So things like the title page and copyright statement, very easy. Braille page numbering. We were also able to implement Roman page numbers for the preliminary material and then start Arabic material at the main body of the text. We were able to retain print page numbers for the books where they existed in the original EPUB file, which we found was in about 30% of the books. Those print page numbers obviously are not going to be of much use unless they know where the book has come from and someone else is referring to the same books. We were able to create a running title. We were able to correct the regular print errors and common scanning errors. We were able to interpret the existing structure, so anything that was there to begin with we could do something with. If it wasn't there, we couldn't, obviously. We were able to retain bold and italics, and often we were able to present them more neatly in the braille than they were in the original file. We were also able to apply list formatting, so that's indented run over, to sections where it was needed, even if it wasn't indicated clearly in the original file. So we looked for headings like index or bibliography or footnotes, and we would automatically apply list formatting to those sections. We found it's also possible to automatically divide braille books into volumes that would be of a manageable size for embossing, but we didn't do this for our first version of BERT because the books were intended to be primarily read as a file. We have started work on that for future versions, but not sure if we will use it. So some things that we couldn't automate were correct formatting of elements that weren't correctly marked up in the original EPUB file. So things like poetry stanzas could be treated in a wide variety of ways in the EPUB. Irregular print errors. There was one book, I can't remember the exact error, but it had a very strange error the whole way through the book. So that's something where if someone had looked at the book, they would pick that up straight away and just do a search and replace, fix it in a second. But because no one was looking at it, it could go through, and it was such a strange error, it wouldn't happen in any other books. Distinction between apostrophes and single quotes, people would know that that can be difficult. So they're presented correctly most of the time, but not all of the time. Another one was prevention of contractions that could encourage misinterpretation in electronic addresses, such as... So the one that we came across very early on was we were getting a lot of our files from EPUB books, and that was... automatically contracting the double B in there, so it was EPUBooks. So because that's one that we will see a lot of, we've corrected that, but there will be other similar things that do go through. Also, prevention of contractions in unusual compound words. So I found a book where it was a new science fiction book, and they were wearing spaceballs, so the EA contraction was used in that word. Theoretically, there could also be problems with unusual abbreviations or acronyms that are pronounced separately as letters, and also with some anglicised foreign words, but we didn't actually find that problem in any of the sample files that we checked, and we did check about 100 fairly thoroughly. So the other thing that you can't automate is the uncontraction of foreign language material, and this does actually occur surprisingly often in the classic novels that we have started off with our production. Also, the consistently correct application of passage indicators for block capitals. So block capitals, sometimes if you have... a sentence in block capitals followed by the word A or I, the A or I will be included in the passage, which doesn't really make sense. And we found that this did occur a little bit in the publication details of the Rapid Braille books, because that had a lot of block capitals and initials for people's names. Also, the correct interpretation of spaces between numbers. So, by default, all spaces are interpreted as a space between two separate numbers, but in the case of phone numbers, ISBNs and long strings, you need a numeric space instead. So those are the things that your transcriber will normally pick up. And also, while we did manage to automate the creation of the running title, and we did use it, that actually took the most of a lot of our time creating complex rules to make it as meaningful as possible. The rules weren't always entirely successful. Okay, so specifically looking at UEB, there are some interesting differences between the way that UEB was automated and the way that other Braille codes might behave in a similar situation. So firstly, capitalised passages don't exist in other Braille codes, so therefore this is a unique problem for UEB where manual intervention is sometimes required. Also, for electronic pathways such as email and web addresses, they're usually uncontracted and transcribed in a separate code in other Braille codes. So UEB eliminates the need to identify every single electronic address, but it does mean that there are some of those addresses where you need to uncontract the things like EPUB books to prevent confusion. Dates, times and units of measure are brailled exactly as they appear in print in UEB, and this eliminates the need for manual intervention that you have with some other braille codes. Also, UEB uses the same braille symbol to represent full stops and decimal points, so you don't need to distinguish between them as you might in some other codes. And finally, UEB is the only braille code that offers a mean for distinguishing underline and script font, which first need to be marked up in order to convey this extra information. So that's it for the specifics of the Rapid Braille project, but there are some other things that I wanted to just touch on. I touched in the written paper on the provision of downloadable files and access to affordable, portable, refreshable Braille display. So we've already talked about the fact that you need to have something affordable in order to even use these sorts of files. One other question, related question that we asked ourselves throughout the project was whether the BRF files are actually going to be of any use to people who have already got a refreshable Braille display and they've got access to the internet. Can't they just access the public domain material themselves and convert it to Braille using the software within their Braille device? So the conclusion that we came to was that this option is theoretically open to our target audience, but they don't always or even most of the time utilise it. There's not just a lack of technical knowledge about how to find the files, how to crack them open, get to the actual text file, and often the text file itself is not just one file, it could be a scattering of them. But it's also just a matter of ease of access. So even if they know that they can theoretically do it and they could figure out how to, it's going to be a lot easier for them to just grab the BRF file that's been provided by us. Also, I've heard several comments about the quality of UEB translation using some of the refreshable Braille devices. So I think that the quality that we're offering would be in excess of that. The other issue that I wanted to talk about today was how the Rapid Braille project fits in with other similar efforts to produce Braille from a single source document. So Vision Australia was not the first organisation to produce Braille from a single source document, and nor were we the first to use an enhanced DAISY XML as that source file. But efforts today have been fairly disconnected, and the exception of that is the DAISY Pipeline 2 project, which I'll just spend a little bit of time explaining to you. I'm one of the working group members, and Pete Osborne here is our co-chair. So briefly, the DAISY Pipeline 2 project aims to build on the DAISY pipeline so that it can be used to convert from text files such as Word or EPUB to DAISY files and to synthetic voice audio and, most interesting for us, to Braille. A working group was set up, or actually it's been three working groups now, to look at the requirements of Braille production, and the group consists of members mainly from Europe, also North America and little old me from Australia. And most people have got expertise in both Braille and DAISY, and some with programming as well. So after several years and incarnations of the group, we've finally identified the key requirements and suggested a modular, pluggable solution. So what we're suggesting is that the DAISY XML file will be enhanced according to the user's regional preferences. We recognise that we all have different needs due to our own formatting guidelines, our own different braille codes, there are different softwares that we're using, etc. So as much as possible will be automated in the enhancement of the DAISY XML file, and any items that do require human decision making will be flagged. So it's, for example, we were talking about difficulty in translating the electronic files. If there's a www dot, it'll highlight those items so that the transcriber can go through and just manually check them. So next, the enhanced file will be sent to one of several possible Braille translators, including, we hope, Duxbury. Very recently, the Swiss Library for the Blind has hired Bert Fries, who is the author of ODT to Braille, which is a Braille plugin for OpenOffice. And part of his work will be dedicated to the Braille DAISY Pipeline 2 project. And he's currently creating a Braille prototype for Pipeline 2. And that's the prototype will be unveiled to our group at this time next week. So anyone who's interested in following these developments can access the group's wiki pages. So Vision Australia began the Rapid Braille project at a time when the outcomes and the timelines of DAISY Pipeline, Braille in DAISY, were much more uncertain than they are now. I still couldn't tell you a timeline, though. But I don't think that our work will be to go to waste. So assuming that the work of the DAISY group is successful, the Braille template that we created for Rapid Braille can be modified slightly to suit the Duxbury plugin to the DAISY pipeline, and also some of the scripts that we use to tidy our input files could be helpful to inform the creation of some of the pre-processes for the pipeline. So that's pretty much it from me. I hope that our little project has given you some food for thoughts about the future of Braille. I think we just took a little small step towards the potential future, but it's during these first steps that it's most important to look around and gain some perspective and balance before taking the next steps. So I definitely invite any comments or questions.
Thank you so much, Leona, and we will take questions in a moment, but just something for us to think about, that Leona is very much involved in the international DAISY pipeline to work, as she's explained, and that that means that she has to get up at all hours of the day and night to talk to people at the other end of the world, which she does with two young children. And I think as blind people we need to express real gratitude for her support and her commitment to making this project work. And certainly it fits into the kinds of things that libraries are thinking about around the world, about the concept of Braille on demand. So people who don't necessarily have Braille displays or just don't like reading continuously from them can emboss this material or indeed have it embossed for them. And that's just one of the several choices that are increasingly being made available because so much work is going on to produce these clean, decent files that will go to a display or go to an embosser. So thank you so much, Leona, for all the work you guys have been doing. And now let's take some questions, please, for Leona from the floor. Janet Reynolds.
Hi, Janet here. Thanks, Leona. That was really interesting and very well presented. A couple of things came to my mind. The first one you've already answered about what advantages it gives over just putting the EBUB through to your Braille display. I was fascinated by the scripts to remove common typos and was interested in what kind of print errors it can pick up. And the other thing I was interested in was italics and bold, whether you included everything that was there or whether your scripts actually decided which were needed and which weren't.
Okay. So in terms of the italics and bold, because we were doing basic general reading material rather than complex material, we did find that most of it was relevant. The only time that it became messy was really, again, in that publication details, where there might be lots of block capitals and italics, but we figured that's something that people are probably not going to read with too much interest anyway. Sorry, what was the other question?
About what kind of print errors you managed to pick up and which you couldn't.
So again, it was regular things, or even not regular things, but just things that we found occurred in books from more than, or in more than one book. We would do our very best to correct those. So things like there was lots of messy punctuation, so wrong number of dots for the ellipsis dots, and spacing before punctuation. All of those sorts of things we tried to tidy up as best we could. The things that we couldn't do were just the things that we didn't recognise. So we looked at, as I said, about 100 books. In the next 100 books, there might be some more errors that didn't occur in those ones. And once we've seen them, we'll try and figure out a way to fix them.
Further questions? Zimbabwe?
It's Muji from Botswana. Thank you, Luana, for good presentation. I'm very happy with the system you are actually using, the DAISY system. Back home in Botswana, we are actually establishing an audio production section whereby we are going to use the DAISY system. You are talking of converting the DAISY material into Braille. I would like to know whether this DAISY system can convert the technical material into Braille, or does it convert only recreational material into Braille? Thank you.
Okay. I think this is probably not relevant just to DAISY, but any conversion to Braille. So technical material obviously presents a lot more complications. We don't have immediate plans to be converting technical material.
It's Betty Noble from Canada. I'm absolutely devastated because I always thought print was perfect and Braille was somewhat less than perfect. So you have just made me the happiest person in the world to know that we can create even better Braille than print.
Excellent. Thank you.
Pete, UK?
I may have missed this, but I think most of the work that you've done through the semi and automated process has been with books. Have you tried other forms of material, such as magazines or financial statements or anything like that, or do you have plans to do so?
No, as I said at the beginning, we wanted to make it a fairly small project, so we did set a lot of parameters, and one of those was that we were dealing with the material that goes into the library collection. So that is mainly novels. We've got lots of ideas for the future, so watch this space.
Jean?
How does... I've had to go use an easy converter, Dolphin easy converter, you know, at taking one file and putting it in different formats. How does what you are doing sort of line up or not line up with that? I mean, what is the difference?
I'd say, like, I took a look at easy converter as well. Basically, what we've done is to give ourselves a bit more control over exactly what is happening. So automatically fixing the problems that we knew could be there making sure that we've got our own preferred formatting and title pages, all of those sorts of things that we specifically want control over, we can have with the Rapid Braille that we can't have with Easy Converter.
Okay. Maria?
Hi, Leona. Just wondering about the comparison of time help, the Rapid Braille project, as opposed to your normal production methods for novels. What would be the time increase?
So Rapid Braille is basically, there's no human intervention, it's just the touch of a button. So that's why we're calling this basically a free bonus format. So something that was existing in as Daisy Full Text is now a Braille book, whereas our standard additions to the Braille collection are done pretty manually. So inputting the text, whether that be from a publisher file or OCR, transcribing and then proofreading. So it's a huge difference.
Andrew from Zimbabwe.
Yes, Andrew from Zimbabwe. I don't know whether it is also possible, you know, with us. We have got a lot of Daisy, you know, books on CD, which we use Victor readers, you know, for our blind, you know, readers to access them. We've got a studio PC. And we have got our IT guy who sometimes, you know, records books on CD. I don't know, with that structure that we have, can we be possible also to do the conversion into from the CDs to Braille?
Okay. One thing that I should have been more clear about is that Daisy does not just mean one thing. So Daisy is a linking between a structure file, and it can also link the audio. But the structure file can just be headings plus page numbers, or it could be the full text. So what I'm talking about here is going from a full text Daisy file, which at the moment is a minority among Daisy books.
Bill Jolly.
Thanks, Mary. Congratulations, Leona, on a good paper and an excellent piece of work that it summarised. I've got two sort of points or questions. The first one is, you're talking about conversion from fairly structured file XML to BRF, and then in the future perhaps from EPUB to BRF. We've still got the issue of getting the text into the Daisy XML in the first place. So you might want to say a little bit about that. And, of course, that problem will, for straightforward material at least, diminish a bit over the years as EPUB becomes more available. But we're not quite there yet. The second one is that you mentioned that there are still obviously some errors, and particularly from printing and other things, that get through. And you do have a mechanism to receive feedback from readers. I think you have a phone number at the front, so you might want to mention a little bit about that process to receive feedback, which then informs future editions of those scripts.
Okay, thank you for those prompts, Bill. That's right, we did make sure that we plastered our feedback mechanisms all over the front of the book, so we are inviting people to let us know of any files that have got errors the whole way through them that we can easily fix. We'd love to know about those. So far we haven't received any feedback, but as I said, the online library won't be launched in full for another few weeks. In terms of going from the EPUB to the XML, or just getting the Daisy XML in the first place, at the moment what we're doing is we have an outsourcer who's got an almost fully automated process of pulling EPUB to Daisy XML, but he'll then go through and add in or correct any structure that's necessary, and that's where we're putting in that book start tag as well that we wanted for our Braille page numbering. in the future, the next version of EPUB will be a lot more in alignment with DAISY, and it's been suggested that they should use DAISY structuring standards within EPUB files. So that it can make it a lot easier. We'll wait and see how the publishers respond to those suggestions.
Bill Poole?
Yes. You may have answered this question at the beginning of the paper and I not noted it, but how many titles have you so far produced in Braille by this method?
I didn't answer that one, but I'm happy to have the question. Yes, okay. So probably so far it's about 60 that are going into the collection, but as I said, we've got 1,000 that we need to go back through and choose which ones will go to Braille, so it will be a lot more than that. And while there's only 60 that have gone into the collection, as I said, we've checked a lot more than that.
Yes. And when did you start the project, did you say?
So it was launched... when was it launched, John? I don't recall. It was at the end of last year.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's fine. No, I was just wanting to get an impression of how things are. I'm sure Braille on Demand will be a valued service if you develop that. Though I do have to tell you that there are some reputable publishers whom I won't name who produce expensive and unsatisfactory print versions of books on demand. I hope you won't imitate them. anyway, thank you very much. That was a very interesting paper.
Thank you.
Jean?
Sorry, there was one other thing I wanted to add. You continually mentioned structured files. Do you have any guidelines for producing structured files? Well, what is involved and what are the steps?
That's a big question. So in terms of producing structured DAISY files?
Yes.
Or
Yes.
So DAISY has got some very thorough guidelines on what a DAISY file is. So it has markup for things like headings and page numbers and indented text, centering, all those sorts of things are what I'm referring to as the structure. And the DAISY Consortium's website's got lots of information on that. Does that answer the question?
How do we access these things for DAISY? Because I've been on the DAISY website. I find it very difficult to find what I'm looking for. So, maybe afterwards I will see you and find out where I can find them.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks.
Further questions? No. Just one last call. All right. I really want to thank Leona so much for her paper and the way Leona you've responded to all the questions, including some really tricky ones. So thank you very much, and let's acknowledge Leona in the usual way. Just before I let you out, just a couple of announcements. Remember that this afternoon at the end of the Code Maintenance Committee meeting, we will need to clear everything, every piece of personal paper and equipment out of this tent so the staff can set up for this evening's dinner. Just to remind you, there's a seating plan for dinner tonight, and we will be honouring three retiring members of the executive. Now, Pete, do you want to call about the Resolutions Committee? Yes, Pete wants the microphone for the Resolutions Committee.
Sorry, I wasn't ready for that. Just to say the Resolutions Committee will meet at our usual time after lunch, and we will go through the remaining resolutions. I think we nearly have all of them now. I hope we do.
That's very well achieved, team. Thank you very much. Thank you, Pete. Now, do we have the lunch menu? And
Leona has the lunch menu, and Leona, it's Leona's turn to read it today. It's Australia's turn to read it today.
So I'm Australian and also don't eat meat, so if I'm pronouncing things wrong, please excuse me. Okay, so for starter and salads, we have a Greek salad, a grilled calamari salad, chorizo and pepper salad, and our usual salad selection, just lettuce, etc. For the hot meals, grilled on the fire, we're told, we have barbecue chicken flatties, skewers, garlic marinated beef steaks, fish parcels and vegetable skewers. There's also pup and shishabu, spinach bake and Italian style potato bake. And for dessert, we have baked sago pudding served with custard, cork sisters and vanilla ice cream, traditional milk tart and fruit skewers served with chantilly cream. There's also the cheeses and biscuits and coffee. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much, Leona. Any last call for announcements that anyone wants to make? Right, we're closing the session now. Thank you very much. And we'll see everybody back because the Code Maintenance Committee report is presented first. So I'd like to see you all in here, please, at 1:30 sharp. Thank you very much. That's an hour and a half away.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We will be switching over, and I have had numerous requests for playing some Afrikaans music, so I haven't selected anything. I'm just going to tell my computer to randomly pick out from my Afrikaans collection. So enjoy. We will be back, or the next session will start in 1.5 hours' time. And I will be back probably before that, just to make sure that the stream is still running. Once again, thank you very, very much for listening. Thanks for your kind messages of encouragement. And hi to Ireland. I'm glad you benefited from the paper this morning, Ilka. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name, but I'm well known for doing that. All right, so over to Afrikaans music. Thanks very much.
Ek dink terug vanaand aan my 14de jaar. Ek was maar pas met sanne 7 klaar.